Good afternoon. They say we make some 35,000 choices a day. If you do a quick internet search, that's what you'll find. Now, that seems a little high to me. That is the equivalent of about one decision every 1.6 seconds if you assume you're awake for 16 hours of the day. But we are constantly making decisions. We are choosing to listen or not. We are choosing to write something down, turn our head for the noise we just heard, scratch the itch, adjust your glasses, and you can see how many small choices we really do make. Not making a choice is also making a choice. So people wouldn't perhaps classify all those as choices, although if you think about it, you would be making a choice if, say, your eyes were itching from allergies and then you had a very conscious decision to rub them or not. And it's a very conscious thing when you dice it up that way. And so we can look at that differently, but that was a study done by Cornell University, 35,000 choices a day for an adult. And it really helps make the point that we make a lot of choices each day. Many are semi-conscious, and often because of that, often because of what we've learned or experienced in the past. We've learned to make choices based on our individual experiences and our life goals. Now I'm going to step out here on a limb. I'm going to say if you've got several children, or twins perhaps, this number may be pretty accurate. Some days I feel like it could be even more. You know, when your brain is in like virtual meltdown, sign perhaps your brain needs a rest from decision making. Sometimes there's too many choices. I mean, take for instance a restaurant with a menu size of a book. You sit down, you ask yourself what you want to eat, you ask your kids what they want to eat. Half hour later, nobody knows. It's too much, and we're really not better off for it. A number of years ago, we were in France for the feast, and we were walking down the streets in Paris with my sister's family. And we had been taking turns with them on buying dinner for both of us each night. And, well, it was his night to pay, and we're walking down the streets of Paris, kind of early, maybe around 5 o'clock or whatever, so there's not very many people out eating. And here we are, this big group of American, obvious Americans walking down the street. And this restaurant owner comes out of his place in broken English. He's like, I better not try to do it. But anyway, he's trying to get us to come into his restaurant, you know, and eat. So Bob's paying that night, so he looks at me, and I kind of nod. I'm like, that's fine with me. I don't care. We got to eat, right? So I figure, what do we got to lose? Well, anyway, we go in, we sit down, he brings out the food, doesn't ask us a thing, we get appetizers, we get like the whole nine yards, we get pouring wine, everybody, and we never asked for anything, and it was really good. And I kept thinking to myself, well, I wonder how much how nice is that bottle? I mean, it was good, but I don't know how good. Anyway, I think it cost quite a bit, but it was Bob's treat, so it was all good with me. So when we go about our day, and we have to choose this and that and where and when and how, do the choices we make matter? Won't the world go on without us? Won't things continue after we're gone, no matter what we choose? Who really cares what we do with our time and our private life? Who cares about all those choices? I'll just first say this. If your life doesn't matter and the choices you make don't really matter, why would God have bothered with you anyway? Why would the miracle of birth been given to you? You were created for purpose, for a reason. You were created to fulfill that purpose and reason in large part by the choices you make. And really, God had a little faith in you. He gives you something very unique And if you fail with what you've been given, God loses too. You're lost to him. 1 Timothy 2:4 tells us God, our Savior, who desires all men to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. And that presupposes that we will use that knowledge to make good choices. And for you and for me, our judgment is now. I think we know that. We should not rest our minds on God's mercy and make our choices according to that. We could push the envelope. We can go to the edge of our cliff. As long as we don't go over, you know, we're good, right? Really? So do our choices matter? Yes. Yes, they do. The small ones, the large ones, and all the ones in between. Because it is the culmination of these choices that dictate, in large part, how our life will turn out, how our children's lives will turn out, and how effective we can be in serving, loving, and being the example we should be to all people. I'm going to give you just a little bit of background for this story. When I was growing up, I was in public school. We lived in Calumet City, Illinois, on State Street, very close to the state line of Indiana. It's a suburb to the south of Chicago, and the neighborhood was marginal. Not inner city crime rates, but upon fact-checking this, I came across this. West Hammond, which would later change its name to Calumet City, was happy to accommodate drinkers from Indiana by 1920, when the national ban happened, Prohibition, Al Capone and the Chicago Outfit continued to serve West Hammond, or Calumet City, with barrels upon barrels of illegal liquor. Organized crime also assisted the State Street Strip with building many speakeasies, gambling dens, and even prostitution businesses. The State Street Strip had everything needed to appease their customers that wanted to walk on the wild side. Before Las Vegas even existed, the State Street Strip, Sin City as it was called, was the place to go in the Midwest. I personally found that pretty interesting. One of those bars was across the street from the house I grew up in. In our street, State Street, was a truck route by the time I came around. So it was busy, loud, and our house shook a little bit when trucks would go by. I believe our house was originally built in the early 1900s, so I could be off on that. But it was quite old. Dad fixed it up, but the bones were old. So perhaps not the ideal setting, but it was home. So I was in the fourth grade, and I met a friend. His name was Nick Popovich. Nick's mom was a nurse. His stepdad was a physicist or scientist of sorts. He had all the name brand clothes. They drove new cars. Their house was modest, but they seemed to have all the stuff that was cool that I wanted. And as you might imagine, they lived a number of blocks from State Street. Nick quickly became my closest friend. We did everything together. Trips, frequent overnighters. We'd go to each other's houses in the morning before school to make crepes. We'd play chess for hours, eat Oreos and tall glasses of milk, which my mom wouldn't let me do. Nick worked with me and my dad sometimes. We had countless experiences together. We got older. My other close friends, Vic and Joe, along with Nick, all dropped out of school in freshman year of high school. Nick's parents wouldn't really let him, so they battled, which made things even worse between them. Joe and Victor's parents were pretty absent in a lot of ways, so it didn't seem to matter much that they didn't want to go to school anymore. This was freshman year of high school. I mean, I was 14 or 15 or something. Our neighborhood started turning more dangerous, and gang-related crime was going up. I no longer desired to go to school either, so I ended up taking homeschool to finish my high school education. I had some dark days as all my closest buddies started down the roads. I didn't really want to go down. But there was sort of an expectation that you always had your buddy's back. I know they had mine, but to be fair, I didn't really require that many circumstances where I needed much backup. So one day, Nick and Vic come over to my house, and they asked me to help them. And I'm thinking, oh boy, someone stole Nick's beeper. He wanted to recover it, but he didn't want to go by himself. He thought, well, if there's a few of us, you know, then nothing can happen. We'll just get it, be peaceful. So we show up, thought it'd be easy. I said, okay, I'll go. Well, okay. We get to this house, knock on the door. The kid opens the door. It's the kid we're looking for. Great. We're on a roll. Nick asks for the beeper, and he says, hold on. And I'm thinking, this worked. He's going to get the beeper. He's going to get back. We're all done. We're leaving. We think, great. So we're standing there a minute or so, and all of a sudden, both sides of the house, like seven or eight kids come out. And I'm like, oh, man. So I'm standing on the porch here with Vic and Nick. There's some posturing, arguing, and ultimately a fight broke out. Now, I had nothing to do with this. I'm just there at the wrong place doing this, getting a beeper. Somehow I was in the middle of it. And after that experience, it was becoming clear that my friend Nick was getting more involved in a world I didn't really want to be a part of. Nick and I did remain friends. I didn't want to hang out with him quite as much, but we remained very close friends. One day when he was 17, he came over with a basketball in his hand. He came into my bedroom on State Street, and he asked if I wanted to play some basketball. Not sure why I didn't or couldn't, but I said no, and he left. Next day, I got a call. Nick was dead. I thought it was a prank at first because, you know, kids do that. I got a call from my friend. He told me. He had gone to a party of sorts, I don't know, the evening before, and he was shot. He was dead. And I'll never forget the hours and the days that followed. No one was ever given any details about what happened that night that I knew of for fear of retaliation, the police said. My best friend, Nick, who I had spent so many years of my childhood with, was dead. He was gone. The choices my friend Nick made, they echoed in my mind for years. The consequences could not have been any worse. The choices he made mattered. They mattered for us all. All of us who ached so long after he was gone. I went to see his mother, and perhaps her pain was the worst of all. So you might not have the same set of circumstances Nick did. But Nick wasn't without good choices. He had a loving mom. He still had a relationship with his biological father. He had physical things. He had me as a friend. Come on! And he decided to make the wrong choices. Maybe he didn't have every emotional need filled. Maybe he longed for things he didn't have or couldn't have. But brethren, is that much different than us? Little by little, he made choices that brought him to that evening with those people in that circumstance. His choices along the path mattered. Brethren, as we pursue the glorious promises given to us, our choices will matter. And they won't always be easy, obvious, or big. When we decide to have one too many drinks, charge more money than we have on our credit card, eat one more plate of dessert, fall for the clickbait, it's all a choice. When we decide to entertain ourselves rather than enrich ourselves, when we decide to blame someone or something instead of seeing our own faults and issues, that's all a choice, and all these things carry consequence. These actions build on themselves and create habits and temptations and trials and struggles, and sadness for not choosing the right. Genesis 39, Joseph's story. We probably all know the story of Joseph. He was favored by Jacob. His dad, his brothers were jealous and maybe pretty irritated, although they ended up sparing his life. They sold him as a slave. So he arrives in Egypt. Genesis 39, starting in verse 6. Thus he, that is Potiphar, left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. I just want to point out that Potiphar, being who he was in the government, probably had a pretty attractive wife as well in form and appearance. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Right there, he strikes down the first hit of temptation. So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. Remember, a beautiful woman in a house with a handsome single man, who does that? Who does that? There's a reason no one does that. But Joseph had integrity. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. And so it was, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, see, he has brought in to us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened, when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. Now, I think we can look at that and be thinking, of course, we wouldn't do that. But those details are given, so we can just imagine how intertwined Joseph was with Potiphar's household. He has authority under a very powerful Potiphar. He's a strapping, handsome young man. He's familiar with Potiphar's wife. He's human. He's temptable. He's without his own wife. He's in the modern-day temptation that countless men and women are caught up in, and many are failing at. So Joseph makes the right choice and ends up with a very dark consequence. From what I have read, prison for the king's prisoners wasn't the prison of today. There was no guaranteed rights that you would be fed, have a bed, or live past dinner time. And yes, he rises through the ranks in prison, and God is with him, but he's still a prisoner. And all for what? He's done nothing wrong in the whole story. And what does he do? He makes the right choices over and over and over. How would we do in a prison like that? Would we be making the right choices? I think I'd be in the corner, all curled up. When you do make the right choice, do you ever find yourself feeling a little congratulatory? Good job. I'm not suggesting we can't be happy when we overcome something or strike down Satan's advance. But it doesn't guarantee the test won't come again. Doesn't mean it'll be easier next time. Making the right choice gives us strength to make the right choice again. It develops our character. It strengthens our resolve. Joseph couldn't even plead his case. No court date, no one to listen to him. Just a dark, lonely life for years. But the future for Joseph was sweet. Hard choice after hard choice. No reward in sight. He had no idea how this would end. He pulled through, and God saw him through. And we know the rest of the story. With God's help, Joseph is second in command in all Egypt, reunited with his family, and saves countless lives during the famine. I've perhaps felt an ounce of what Joseph went through in his life. Not exactly the same, but for us, maybe it's slugging through a tough job, not just physically, maybe emotionally, surviving gossip or slander, a tough time in a relationship, tough circumstances where you feel there's no good way out, addictions, temptations. See, at the end, if we could pull through like a Joseph, our future is sweet too. Each day, as we live the gift of life, many of the choices we make we'll never consider. Many of these choices seem pretty inconsequential, and some are, but a lot of them have weight, and many of them are small with the potential to develop into something quite large. I think of words spoken, actions taken, small stuff, passing comments. I remember them. I don't think I'm alone. An encouraging word, an inspiring story, a little help when it's needed. Small choices, big results in the life of that person you're affecting, especially children, especially your own children, and really big consequences for you. Giving of yourself results in your own happiness. There are a lot of studies on this, but pro-social acts, such specific good deeds, opening a door or picking up a coffee for a coworker on the way to work, a friend, these things help us feel good. Making that choice and feeling will lead to that choice being made more and more often. And lighting up your example to others, reflecting the fruits of the Spirit by the way you live your life day by day. And who knows, maybe one day our kids will all thank us for the 30,000 things we did. Maybe. North Carolina Public Broadcasting explains there are 6 ways decisions are made. Impulsiveness. Leverage the first option you are given and be done. Compliance. Choosing with the most pleasing, comfortable, and popular option as it pertains to those impacted. Delegating. That's my favorite. Not making the decision yourself, pushing it off to a trusted others. Avoidance or deflection. Either avoiding or ignoring decisions in an effort to avoid responsibility for their impact or just simply preventing them from overwhelming you. Balancing. Weighing the factors involved, studying them, and then using that information to render the best decision in the moment. Prioritizing and reflecting. Putting the most energy, thought, and effort into those decisions that will have the greatest impact. As you consider which method to use in a given situation, and I think there's a time for each kind of decision-making process, seems a little harder to find a good reason to be impulsive, you know, but how do you make your choice? What's your backdrop? What's your starting point? How do you know what a good choice is? The answer is in seeking wisdom. We cannot know all things, but we can seek wisdom. Proverbs 2. Proverbs 2. Proverbs 2, starting verse 1. My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you, so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding. Yes, if you cry out for discernment and lift up your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly. He guards the path of justice and preserves the way of his saints. Then you will understand righteousness and justice, equity, and every good path. We can ask for the things we don't know we need, so we can do the things we could not do before. A lot of what we do often doesn't register as much of anything. Doesn't really seem to be a choice. Doesn't seem like we made a choice, but we do. And each day, we make choices that matter. Choices where we could use a little wisdom. And you and I, we have choices to make that are hard. Because our everyday is not just choosing what gets us through that day, or moment, or circumstance. We're living in the same world, but we're not playing by the same rules. Maybe you're feeling justified because there's no explicit scripture to tell you you can't. You can go up to the edge, hope not to cross the line. Is that wisdom? Is that the Spirit of God working in you? Maybe something else. If you're not going to lie, you'll have some awkward answers at times when people ask you a question. Not everyone is contending with the regular choices and making choices based on integrity and obedience and being an example. Not everyone strives for those things in the choices they make. Lying, stealing, cheating. I thought those were three good examples of things people do often for their benefit. They make the choice to do these things to get what they want, need, covet, and to stay out of trouble. They cover a lot of different behaviors and are prevalent in a lot of circumstances. Just a couple of statistics on lying. This was an article of Fox News, March 11th, 2013. When it's okay to lie in a relationship. Honesty may not be the best policy when it comes to relationships. Couples lie to each other on an average of 3 times a week. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, according to a recent study soon to be published by the journal Communication Quarterly. Now, as I read the studies on these topics, I look for big study groups and known sources. And it's not always as concrete as I would like, but from gathering many resources, people lie from about 1 to 2 times to several times a day. And men generally lie more than women. That's what it says. This is what I find after looking over a dozen studies or so. But if you lie once a day, once a week, once a year, what's the difference? How could anyone trust what you say? Let's move on to stealing. The National Association for Shoplifting Prevention says more than $13 billion worth of goods is stolen from retailers each year, which is more than $35 million a day. The NASP says more than 10 million people have been caught shoplifting the last 5 years. And a study by the Food Marketing Institute from 2009 says an estimated 33.1% of total losses are attributed to employee theft. Cheating. There's two kinds of cheating, really. I mean, maybe there's more, but two obvious kinds. As reported on CNN, the book The Monogamy Myth by Peggy Vaughn reported that 60% of men and 40% of women will have an affair at some point in their marriage. In a survey of 24,000 students at 70 high schools, Donald McCabe of Rutgers University found that 64% of students admitted to cheating on a test, 58% admitted to plagiarism, and 95% said they participated in some form of cheating, whether it was on a test, plagiarism, or copying homework. This isn't us, is it? It's not the high bar we were called to. We can't do any of those things. We can't choose those behaviors. We have to do it the hard way, the long way, the way of the narrow path. When I look back on those days, many years ago with my friend Nick, I made some choices too. Although I would never say that I had all this wisdom to make those choices. God and my parents stood in that gap. More than anything, they loved me, and that's what showed. See, my friend Nick died in what we all thought was a gang-related incident. We never heard anything else from the police, but the rumors spread. But my friend Joe and my friend Victor, they both went to federal prison for years, shortly after Nick lost his life. Not for the same thing and not at the same time, but those three were the best friends I had from second grade when I met Victor all the way into adulthood. And I spent all this time, my life with these people, and I was a little disoriented, wondering what I was going to do. I wrote this poem when I was in my 20s. I'm not going to read it. It wasn't very good. But I was trying to get a foothold on life. Anyway, it displayed the hardship of making choices. In my 20s, I mean, you have your friends, your marriage, your career, baptism, travel, credit cards, student loans, mortgages, car payments, and they all sort of happen in this decade. I realize all those things don't happen for everyone in those years. But generally speaking, it's a time of many choices. Many big decisions are cast for your life in these years. And how is it you're supposed to make these choices? Wisdom and a little help from mom and dad. The choices my parents made mattered a ton. how they dealt with all the facets of raising their kids, their example, how they wanted to live and exemplify their life, changed my life, formed my life. My dad's focus on God and Bible study and work ethic, my mom's choice to put her family first, those were the choices that had huge impacts on me. Not so much in the moment, in some cases, not for years. In some cases, the impact wasn't felt until they died. But they have impacted my career, my fatherhood, and other areas. And it isn't all good. I wish some of their choices would have been different. I don't want us to believe that our choices don't matter. That how we live, how we interact with other fellow potential eternal brothers and sisters, our children, our brethren, the words that flow from our lips, how we keep the Sabbath, how we use our spare time, how we serve, how we show selflessness, and frankly, how we show self-worth. Don't believe it doesn't matter. Let's take a look in the Bible here, a couple of small decisions, some big impacts. I just happened to be reading this a couple of weeks ago. This was Joseph's nephews. Quite a different turnout they had. This is Genesis 38. Genesis 38, verse 1. It came to pass at the time that Judah departed from his brothers and visited a certain Adullamite whose name was Hurah. Then Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shuah, and he married her and went into her. So she conceived and bore a son, and he called his name Ur. She conceived again and bore a son, and she called his name Onan. And she conceived yet again and bore a son, and called his name Shelah. He was at Chezib when she bore him. Then Judah took a wife for Ur, his firstborn. And her name was Tamar. But Ur, Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord killed him. And Judah said to Onan, go into your brother's wife and marry her and raise up an heir to your brother. But Onan knew that the heir would not be his. And it came to pass, when he went to his brother's wife, that he admitted on the ground, lest he should give an heir to his brother. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord, and therefore he killed him also. It was seemingly a small event. Ur was wicked. God didn't care for that attitude, those actions. We don't know exactly, but he didn't choose right. He went the other way. And then Onan, he didn't want to abide by the familial responsibility under the old covenant, and he could have done things differently. This Levirate marriage, as it's referred to, had another way out for Onan, spelled out in Deuteronomy 25:5. But the point is, he made a decision to enjoy his new wife, not take on the role of producing offspring for his brother, and God took his life for it. Small thing, big consequence. What about Adam? I'm going to put the weight on Adam. Small thing, right? I mean, it's a piece of fruit. It's food. Like, is it really that big of a deal? I'm not sure what experience Adam had to know Satan's tactics, but I suppose he could have talked to God pretty easily, checked on this talking serpent. Eve can go in here too, but Adam was the lead, and he made a choice. A small thing, but the consequences were enormous. And it's not just who you think you affect with the words and actions and examples. It's the development of you to fulfill the purpose you have on the earth. It's for your kids if you have kids, and for those that might look to you for that help, for that encouragement, for that need. I can't speak for anyone but myself at this point, but I look around this room and I've learned things from many of you in different ways. Quietly at times, by example, by humility, by stories, by conviction. It all works together so we build each other up. But your choices do matter to me. As I come to the end of this message, I want to take a look. 1 Corinthians 13. 1 Corinthians 13, we all know this is the love chapter, and I think it has become popular to put our name in place of love. A good test to see how we're doing. But love is an action. Love is a choice. Love is something we do because we want to do it. Maybe it's easy. Maybe it's not. But love is our high calling. Love is our test. I've rephrased the first three verses because it really is a choice, and I want us to read it that way. So I'll start here in verse 1, but it's not going to read exactly this way in your Bible. So verse 13, verse 1, or 1 Corinthians 13, verse 1. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but I don't make the choice to love, I have become sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, so that I could remove mountains, but don't decide to love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but choose not love, it profits me nothing. Our greatest command is a choice. Love doesn't just happen. It's kind of just a lofty idea, really, if we don't choose to love and we just read about it. Lastly, I'd like to take a look at Jesus Christ. Turn with me to the book of Matthew, Matthew 26. Matthew 26, verse 36. Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane and said to the disciples, "Sit here while I go and pray over there." And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and he began to be sorrowful and deeply distressed. And then he said to them, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch with me." He went a little farther and fell on his face and prayed, saying, "Oh, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." And then he came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, "What? Could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh is weak." Again, a second time, he went away and prayed, saying, "Oh, my Father, if this cup cannot pass away from me unless I drink it, your will be done." And he came and he found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. So he left them, went away again, and prayed a third time, saying the same words. Brethren, Christ suffered. He anguished. He hurt. He was sorrowful. I don't know about you, but I've suffered much less and thought it was all I could stand. Yet Jesus Christ made a choice to suffer. He chose to go through unbelievable pain and hurt. He chose it. It was a choice for him. But his love for us was stronger than his desire to call down a multitude of angels. Our Savior suffered for us. He chose us. When Jesus died for us, he didn't choose the easy way. He didn't choose the path that felt the best. He chose the path that gave us life. Brethren, when we wake up in the morning, when we go about our day, it's our choice on what we will do. Remember, he chose us, the base sinners we all are. Brethren, choose him.